It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Well, hold on to your seats. Another lawsuit against the Trump administration. I'm sure that comes as an incredible shock to everyone. This time it's over the text message thread, which took place on Signal, talking about an imminent attack, which we now know was in the Middle East, taking out Houthi terrorists. And guess who's been assigned the case? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. That's right, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, the same judge who recently ordered Trump to stop his deportation plans. Amazing that it randomly went to him again. What are the odds? Now, this suit was filed by the government watchdog group American Oversight. They claim Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and others violated federal records laws by discussing the Houthi attack plans in Signal. Signal has been approved for years by the CIA and was used in the Biden administration all the time. But let's not confuse the matter with facts. And let's not look too carefully into the objective, unbiased record of James Boasberg. James Boasberg, the judge who once gave a mere slap on the wrist to former FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith rather than the 4 years of jail he deserved when the lawyer pled guilty to forgery. Yeah, forgery, a fake email used for a FISA search warrant to spy on 2016 Trump campaign official Carter Page. Biased district judges dictating national policy based on what? Their election to the highest office of the land? Or did he sing himself to victory on American Idol? Now, for those of you who think this judge is just out to get conservatives and religious groups, other peoples that Trump protects, rest assured, Boasberg is not that far on the left. He's not an atheist. He used to be. Yeah, he used to be an atheist, but then he discovered that he himself is God. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, also on the thread, has taken responsibility for Atlantic journalist Jeffrey Goldberg's phone number accidentally being invited to the chat. It may have been a lower staff screw-up, but Waltz is taking responsibility anyway, which is good. Unfortunately, that doesn't satisfy the Democrats who've been looking for something to sink their teeth into, some new so-called scandal to get the public's mind off of their record low approval ratings, lack of leadership, and swinish public comments by the likes of Jasmine Crockett. Well, there was a hearing in the Senate. Democrat Senator Mark Warner showed outrage. He was outraged by this. But Warner himself used Signal to work with a lobbyist for a Russian oligarch in relation to the manufactured steel dossier, which started the Russian hoax against Trump. And you just gotta love this sudden conversion to national security concern with senators like Eric Swalwell, who had an affair with a suspected Chinese spy. You know what happened to him? Nothing. And who was concerned when President Biden's Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin went to the hospital without even notifying the president? For that matter, which Democrat was concerned about our national security for the past 4 years when we had a walking, talking corpse in office? Who exactly was running the country? And why were people around Joe Biden lying about his sharp mental capacity? Listening to his staff talk, you'd think the guy was a cross between Albert Einstein and a college chess master. At the moment, Goldberg being added to the text is a mystery. But here's something I'm hearing very few talk about. It is coming up, but very few. What if it wasn't a mistake? Goldberg is not exactly the Mahatma Gandhi of journalism. He famously spread the now-debunked Russia hoax. He lied about a Trump statement. This was at a World War I American cemetery in France. He claimed Trump said, "It's filled with suckers and losers." Now, that remark was debunked even by John Bolton, a fierce adversary of Trump, but he insisted he never heard any such comment, nothing even close. So why would Goldberg, of all people, be the one accidentally invited to this chat? Who on Trump's cabinet would have this character on their contact list? Could this have been a hacking? We don't know. Nobody knows yet. But let's for a moment just give Goldberg the benefit of the doubt and say he was innocently invited to the text chat. Let's assume he didn't find a way to compromise the system through some kind of technology. He was, as he reports, invited to the text thread. Okay. But in that scenario, once Goldberg got invited to the chat, realizing it was a mistake, why would he have joined the chat anyway? Or if he joined not knowing what the chat was about, thinking it was open to the public or media, it would have been mere moments before realizing the conversation he was in the middle of. He stayed anyway. He stayed with the intention of later releasing a transcript of the conversation. This makes him, for all intents and purposes, a hacker. Not by breaking in, but by nature of his remaining after realizing where he was. Why didn't he say, "Excuse me, I believe I'm here by mistake," or why didn't he just promptly leave? If he really thought it was classified information, he should have said to himself, "I don't belong on this chat, something's wrong." And if it was classified, as he keeps insisting, why did he release it? Either way, he knew he did not belong on that message thread. When he chose to go on and remain on anyway, he became a hacker. You don't have to crack a password to be a hacker. All you have to do is be in the wrong place at the wrong time and decide not to do the right thing. Just thinking out loud, just a few questions, just Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Here with me in the studio is Jim Barrier. Now, usually once or twice a month he calls in, but he's in the studio. He's here incarnate, and not only that, but since you're used to hearing him on the phone, he has with him, and I saw with my own eyes, the very cell phone he calls the show on when he does call the show. Jumpin' Jiminy. Welcome in person, Jim.
Oh, man. Thanks, Bob. I always love being here in the studio with you. I love doing the show when I'm on my little antique cell phone, but it's just a whole lot more fun because there's energy in the room. There's eye contact. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
Are we getting old when we have to refer to cell phones as antique versions? And it's true. If you look at the original cell phones when they first came out, or even just an older version of an iPhone, but it's amazing. We just can't catch up.
It's crazy. So, here I am. I'm in San Diego, and there's a reason I'm here in town. I was invited some time ago to a reunion. Now, this reunion was not a school reunion. It was a youth group from a church here in town, Skyline Church, who we talk about on the show regularly.
Where Dana and I attend now.
Yeah, and so they first set the thing, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't come. I'm doing something else. Leslie and I have been traveling a lot. And so they moved it. And said, how about this date? And I said, I can't do that one either. And the third time, were they moving it
just for you, or were there others that were having trouble with the date
also? I wouldn't be so egocentric to think they were moving it just for me, but maybe there was divine providence. I don't know. They did want me to be there, but so the third time they set a date, I said, I can do that one. I'll book it right now. So I got a flight, made arrangements to come out here and contacted you immediately and said, let's do the show. I'll do the show on this night because I'm going to be in town and I can be in the studio. And so then this morning, I went with you and attended Skyline Church. Great service. And went to Bob Siegel's Forbidden Table Talk class and enjoyed that. Here's how good I liked it, Bob. There wasn't one time when I wanted to stand up and correct you for being wrong.
But, you know, if you ever wanted to, Jim, you have every right to be mistaken and wrong in your attempts to correct me. So I want you to always feel free to go ahead. Hey, I was just thinking, I remember the time you told us about a high school reunion. I know this wasn't your high school reunion, but you did go to a high school reunion, and they had you on the board listed as one of the people who had passed away.
I went to my 50th.
Now, do you think the people at Skyline were that desperate to get you because they heard about your resurrection and they thought you're the next best thing to Jesus?
Well, one of my friends calls me Lazarus now because of that. That was my 50th high school reunion, 50-year reunion. That was 6 years ago. I went to Mount McGill High School in Spring Valley, not far from where you live. And what happened, we're just doing rabbit trails. That reunion was a great event. I'll explain some other time why I was on the memorial wall for being dead. And I just thought of another thing. But anyway, shortly after that, a couple of weeks after our reunion, a very close friend of mine, my friend Jeff Buckner, who was one of the organizers, passed away. Great guy, Bob Hogan, who I had been close with for a long time, and he suddenly died. And Jeff called me and he said, I can't wait every 10 years. We're losing people too fast. And so now there is a reunion at least once a year. And so Tuesday I'm going to a Mount McGill reunion luncheon, alumni luncheon. So I'm getting two things out of this trip, and three because I'm on a show.
Yeah, the first high school reunion I went to, and I had never gone to them over the years, was the 40th.
Yeah.
And there were about one-third of the people in my class who had passed away. Some of them friends.
Yeah.
And of course, in our days, you didn't keep up with people on Facebook, so you really did lose touch.
Right.
It was very overwhelming to see a list of names like that.
It can be.
All in one fell swoop.
But imagine if you looked up and saw your own picture.
You'd think you were in the Twilight Zone. So, one man attends his own high school reunion and sees himself on the death board.
Imagine. If you will.
He thinks he's at a reunion, but he's really in the Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
Yes.
So I want to talk about Skyline Church tonight. I mean, we've talked about politics and we've talked about sports. And at halfway point on the show, we'll probably mention some pop music from that era.
Well, this is going to make a great Skyline infomercial that they won't even have to pay for.
They don't even have to pay for it. And I'm going to give the best plug they've ever had. But I wanted to talk about this church and how it affected me. So you're going to get a little bit of my personal testimony. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because the Apostle Paul, throughout the book of Acts, told his story over and over again about the road to Damascus and what happened. So I'm going to do that and tell what happened in my life. Now, when I was in middle school, we called it junior high then, I went to Palm Junior High up in Lemon Grove, and I had a science teacher there, Mr. Purvis, who happened to live on the same street that I lived, and everybody hated him. I hated him. We used to go egg his house all the time.
That is quite a name, Mr. Purvis.
Mr. Purvis.
Sounds a little bit like the word pervert. That's a strange name for a teacher.
We rhymed it with nervous. We said Purvis is nervous.
All right. Well, that works,
but he was a Christian.
Oh.
And he used to tell me all the time, I'm praying for you, Jim. Now, this is a science teacher in a public school. He eventually had to quit because he was teaching science, and he refused to teach evolution as fact.
Oh, good for him.
And so it cost him his career that he wouldn't compromise. But he prayed for me all the time. So we'll flash forward just a little bit, a couple of years. And my mom was a single mom. And in the 60s, there weren't that many single mothers. It was challenging for her. And she was worried about me that they were going to put me in a home or whatever. You know, I was going to get in trouble. I wasn't a bad kid, but I was a teenager in the 60s. And so she was trying everything. And she talked to a friend of hers and said, I don't know what to do about my son. And her friend said, well, have you tried praying? Well, my mom was not a Christian. She was more into Jean Dixon and Edgar Cayce and, you know, reincarnation.
Astrology, yeah.
But she said, well, I've tried everything else. This was my mother's prayer. God, I don't know what to do with this boy. You do something with him.
That's a good prayer from anybody. I could see God honoring that prayer.
Well, she did, and within a matter of months, I became a believer. Now, here's the path. This is how I got there. I had some friends that attended Skyline Church.
And this was the old Skyline.
Old Skyline Orville
Church. The church has its name from the street called Skyline
which Drive.
The new church building doesn't meet on anymore.
No, and the pastor was Orville Butcher, a great, great preacher. It was Skyline Wesleyan Methodist Church.
Well,
remember
I'm
that.
I'm glad they shortened that name. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come back and refer
to
that.
Good way to turn half the people away from the door.
Well, I didn't know anything. I'd never been to church. I'd never darkened the doorway of
a
church.
Well, the Wesleyans have a great history, but I just think the need
without
to
a doubt.
Put any denominational title is unnecessary.
But I had never been to church. I'd never read the Bible. I used to joke and say, I thought Jesus Christ had a brother named Euthyphro.
And his parents were Mr. and Mrs. Christ.
Yeah. Euthyphro Christ. Yeah. But anyway, my friends kind of tricked me into coming to church functions. Not really at the church service, but there was youth things, beach parties and different things going on, and I would come to these events. One of them was a friend, Jim Crosswhite. He was like the local hippie. He was just a freak, but he was a Christian, and everybody thought he was mysterious because he had long hair and he dressed funny. The other was Don Albee, who was as straight as a pin. And one time Don Albee came to me and he said, Jim, I'm praying for you. And I said, Don, save your breath. There's no one on the other end listening. Lo and behold, Don got the last laugh. So I started going to some of these activities. And one of them, there was a meeting. It was off campus. It was at somebody's house. And there were these guys that were former drug people and kind of hippie looking, biker type looking guys. And so that was intriguing to me. And I sat after that meeting and talked to one of the young men. And he challenged me with what classically is called Pascal's wager. And he said, Jim, if I'm right and you're wrong, I gain everything and I lose nothing. If you're right and I'm wrong, you gain nothing and I lose nothing. That just bugged me.
And you lose everything, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then he said, he used the old C.S. Lewis thing. If Jesus Christ made the claims that he did, he was either a liar or a con artist, or he was who he claimed to be.
And what's interesting is even people that aren't Christians don't like to call Jesus a liar or a lunatic.
No.
Like to say,
he was a good teacher.
He was a good teacher. Yeah. There's just something in their DNA that doesn't want to come out and be against
Christ. Yeah, he was a good man.
There's exceptions, but that would be true for most people.
But if he wasn't telling the truth, he was either...
Then he was crazy, yeah.
Or crazy.
Or lying, yeah.
I laid awake all night long, and this young man challenged me to pray. He said, will you just pray a prayer? And I said, well, I don't believe in prayer. So just pray a prayer and say, God, if you're really there, reveal yourself to me. And so I did. I altered a little bit, and I prayed, God, and I don't believe you're there, but if you are, will you show yourself to me? Shortly after that, and I didn't have a revelation. No angel visited me. I didn't have any big mysterious thing, but I began to have a revelation of truth about who Jesus, I started reading the Bible, and I started seeing these crazy things that Jesus said, and I thought about all that. Well, this guy was either nuts, or maybe there's something to it. And eventually, it led to my conversion. Now, I started going to Skyline Church, and I went to their youth group. I was only a high school, I was 16 years old. They had a youth camp, a summer camp, I'm real big on summer camp because of this. I was up in near Lake Arrowhead in San Bernardino area and at the Blue Jay Lodge, not related to the George Harrison song. And during that time, I just got more and more convinced, and they had team competitions. So we'd play softball and volleyball. So you're trying to win things for your team. Well, one of the things they had was they would memorize verses out of the book of 1 John. Well, I'm all about competition. I started memorizing scriptures before I was even saved. And those scriptures are foundational to me. I can quote most of the book of 1 John still. And anyway, midweek through the service, they had a baptismal service through that week. And Jimmy Johnson, who was the greatest youth pastor I've ever seen, baptized me on August 28th, 1968. And from that point on, I knew I was a follower of Christ. So that was the beginnings. That's how I came to the faith. And this was now year 1968. And if you recall, and if you don't, read a history book, look it up on Wikipedia. 1968 was a brutal year. Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Bobby Kennedy
was assassinated. The Democratic National Convention riots took place. Vietnam was raging. There were race riots in the streets. It was a violent, violent year. And in the middle of all that violence and chaos, I found the Prince of Peace. And I put my hand to the plow and never looked back. And one of the things at that camp, most of the kids went to church all the time. They go to camp every year and get saved every year. And we were all reflecting at the end of the week, and some kid says, well, yeah, you know, next week we go back to school and everything is back to normal. And I said, you're out of your mind. I'm not going back. That wasn't normal. I'm never going back. And I just went nuts for Jesus. People thought I'd had a bad acid trip or something because I was so radical. I was going through the hallway. I was going out on, you know, the football field, everywhere. I was preaching about Jesus. I had a speech class. And no matter what the topic was, somehow I found a way to talk about Jesus in my speech class. I actually memorized the four spiritual laws. Remember that? God loves you and has a wonderful plan for you.
Yeah.
I gave, that was my speech one time. I gave the whole thing, scripture references and everything. And so I was all in, and it was just the major turning point for me. And as I said, I never looked back. That was all because of the ministry of Skyline Wesleyan Church. The pastors there, Orville Butcher was the senior pastor. Jimmy Johnson was my youth pastor. We had a high school attendance of 300 kids a week.
No kidding.
It was awesome. Derek Johnson was the music director, and he went on to work for Disney later on. And then Ira Shanafelt was an old guy, and he was a Bible scholar, and he was the one that had us doing 1 John. He wrote a book about 1 John. I've never been able to get a copy of it. I should track that down with Scott. Someone there might have an old copy of his commentary on 1 John. But those things were foundational for me. And I look back to that time, and I thank God for Skyline Church. So when we had this reunion, I went and saw these people. I knew most of them. There was only about 20, 22 people. But they were all from that youth group and that era. I knew some of them. None of us looked the same, except for one girl. She looked like she hadn't aged at all.
There's always one of those, isn't there?
I say girl, but when I knew her, she was a teenager. And it was a great time of reunion, and several of those people became pastors. I did eventually, was probably shocked everybody, because I was kind of like an anomaly. I came to this church, it was very conservative, and I had this afro, and I was in a rock and roll band. I was, you know, dressed funny, looked funny, and I was kind of like the token hippie.
You were in that Jesus Revolution era,
that hadn't even happened yet. Yeah, I was a harbinger to that. That hadn't quite taken place yet. Yeah, I had a Christian band. Well, there was no Christian music. So we had to take songs like Come On People Now, Smile On Your Brother, and stuff like that, or, you know, some old spiritual song and rock and roll it up, because there wasn't any Christian rock. And
so was it Michael Rowed the Boat Ashore?
That stuff didn't float my boat. I liked rock and roll, as Brandon will confirm. So we had to tough it out.
Thank you. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel and our show within a show. Yes, it's time for another episode of Stump Jim Barrier.
Hooray, hooray. First off, welcome, yeah. Jim. Welcome to San Diego again. We missed you so much.
Oh, I love it here. I've only been here a few days, and I've had Mexican food 6 times.
Hey, I have a stump for Jim. Since you were talking about Bible names, what was John the Baptist's middle name?
The.
Very good. Very good, Jim.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that.
Okay, now, we're nostalgia tonight, so Brandon, make it good.
Okay. First off, I want to thank Jim for being here tonight, and then secondly, because Jim was here, that's the reason why the Padres just won their game today. So,
oh, they won.
Still undefeated.
They're
3-0.
In first place.
Yep. Okay. But not yet, technically. Technically, Los Angeles is still 5-0.
Well, he makes the Padres win. He resurrects at high school reunions.
It's amazing.
I will thank you. I will thank you for not mentioning that franchise north of us while I'm in this building.
All right. So, by request, I decided to save my other Jim Barrier for later and go to the year 1968 like you requested.
Okay.
So, without any further ado, here is your song. Let's see if you can get it.
Of course I can.
Oh, immediately.
Yeah. Let it play. He's about to say the name of the song. I Cry Like a Baby. This is the Box Tops.
That is correct. Good job. Here, here's a little bit more of it.
Okay. Yeah. Crazy. I cry like a baby. Why don't I that you're not a plaything, not a toy or a puppet on a string? Great song.
Good job, Jim. I'm impressed. They only took 3 seconds.
Well, when he tells you what year it has to be in, that might help a little bit.
Okay.
I would have told you, but that's the Box Tops, who, by the way, sang The Airplane. Give me a ticket for an aeroplane.
Oh, yeah.
And then a lesser-known song, which I loved, because this is right when I became a Christian, they had a song called I Met Her in Church.
That one I don't remember.
It's obscure.
Ticket to an Airplane. That was an old classic.
That's almost called The Letter, and I remember one of the facts I gave you, because that was one of our first Stump Jim songs, was that is the song that went to number one that had the shortest amount of time in terms of a song span, because it was only like a minute and 50 seconds.
My baby, she wrote me a letter.
You know why they did that, Brandon, in those days? And the Dave Clark Five were the kings of doing the 2-minute.
Weren't they the first Beatle ripoff group, the Dave Clark Five? Weren't they the very first?
Not really, but they were big competition.
Them and the Stones both.
Yeah, a lot of them. Jerry and the Pacemakers, the Searchers, a bunch of those bands. The Animals were the first British group to have a number one hit after the Beatles, by the way. But
you mean House of the Rising bass in it.
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah, that's a great
which
song.
You've used the music interview.
I use that as bumper music. Yeah. I sure
yeah.
do.
Anyway, the reason they did those two-minute songs was because they could get played more often on the air. KCBQ used to play those songs.
Oh, yeah. When I first moved to San Diego, I used to listen to KCBQ as an oldie station. They weren't a talk radio station.
Yeah, and if you had a song in the top 40 and it was less than 2 minutes, it was likely going to get one extra play in the course of the program. So that was part of that. More trivia. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to Trivia with Brandon and Jim.
That's right. Yeah. So very quickly, for the letter, the reason why it was so short, according to what I'm reading, it's because they had the demo, and then the producer's like, okay, I like this idea, but you guys only have enough for a one-hour session. So they came into the song without any rehearsal at all, and they just kind of jammed it out in like one quick session.
Yeah.
So that's what they said. But,
well, no, that's probably true, but it's but
still
it was
a
also
great song.
It was also a commercial thing. It was all about the money. And in those days, anybody could go in, find a music studio, and they'd have some quirky sound or some new thing. It didn't have to be the same as everybody else. And those days, the producers go, yeah, we'll give it a try. And so that's why in the mid-60s, you had acid rock, you had surf rock, you had Motown. You even had crossovers like Glenn Campbell and Johnny Cash that got in on rock and roll with country songs. And anything went, you know. So
yeah,
it was a great time. All right, thanks. That was fun. A blast from the past. Okay, we're going to pick up now with my story. Now, I was talking about the youth camp I went to, and I had mentioned earlier my science teacher, Mr. Purvis, who lived on my street, and we used to throw eggs at his house and just harass him. One of the camp counselors was his daughter, Patty Purvis, who attended Skyline Church.
Patty Purvis.
Patty Purvis. I know.
That's a little ring to
cartoon
it.
Character. And she was so tickled. She said, my dad's going to be so happy that you've given your life to the Lord. And the first thing I did when I got home is I went up the street to Mr. Purvis's house, knocked on his door, and apologized.
For all the eggs you were through over the years.
Yeah. And for just all the abuse and for being such a rebel. And it was a great time. And we just sat there on his front porch.
But look at the love of Christ. You throw eggs at his house and he keeps telling you how he's praying for you.
That,
like the Bible says, burning embers on your head.
Yeah. He was a real Christian. That's what he was. And in his profession as a teacher, he paid the price. And turning the other cheek, and I know your take on that, and that's pretty much it. I insulted him all the time. He just kept taking it, and he loved me. He never tried to punish me unduly. Certainly, I deserved punishment. I always said in junior high school, I had a reserved seat in the principal's office. Anyway, Patty Purvis, daughter of my science teacher, was there, and it was a great story. And again, I just never turned back. Now, I got real involved at Skyline Church and the youth group there, to the point where I was voted in as president of the youth group. Now, I don't know why you have a president of a youth group, but they were doing that model, and they had board members, and so we had a secretary treasurer. We had all these, you know, things, and I was the president of the youth group with my goofy hair and my goofy shirts and all of that. I was kind of an anomaly, and I think that's the only reason. They thought, this is funny, we'll make Jim the president. That's probably fair play, because before I was a Christian, I was very cynical, and when they had the elections at high school for the student body, you know, they vote for the class president and all that, I put up posters, and I ran for king. Jim Michaels for king, because that was my name before I became a Christian.
Why was your name Jim Michaels rather than Jim Barrier before?
Well, my parents divorced when I was very small, and then my mother remarried when I was 9 years old, fourth grade, and they enrolled me and changed my name to Michaels, because that was her new married name. They never adopted me.
But Barrier was the name you were born with.
That my born name. And so they never adopted me, never legally changed my name. And so I just went to school, and I was Jim Michaels. And
did you decide, since you became a Christian, you wanted a new name to go with your new character?
No, it had more to do with, I thought, I need my diploma to have the right name on it.
Oh, yeah. Didn't think of that.
So I went into the dean's office before my senior year, and I showed them my birth certificate, and they changed my name. Now, the first day of school, my senior year, I've had this conversion experience, and I've changed my name back to what it really is. So I'm in a class, and the teacher's taking roll, and she says, Jim Barrier, and I raise my hand. Kid next to me, Ray Nichols, says, oh my gosh, you look just like a friend of mine. I said, really, what's his name? He said, Jim Michaels. I said, oh, I knew Jim Michaels. He said, well, what happened to him? I said, oh, he died. He was shocked. He turned white. He said, no. I said, yeah.
Now, this didn't have anything to do with your death being put on the board of
your
high school.
Yes,
it did.
That's
where
that came from.
So this was the explanation?
Yeah.
So it was Jim Michaels that they said had died?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And Ray, you know, I'm telling
him. You couldn't make a story like this up.
I said, yes, Jim Michaels died in a swimming pool up in the mountains. And then I finally fessed up. I said, I've become a Christian. I got baptized, and I also changed my name back legally to what it is. But it was a lot of controversy. People were very confused. There were people that knew me with both names, obviously, all through my life as a student. So that was part of the thing. Now, I got so crazy involved in following Jesus that at school, everywhere I went, all I could talk about is Jesus. My friend Jim Crosswhite, who I mentioned, got suspended because he had written some Christian graffiti on his shoes. You know, God loves you, Jesus saves. And there was one teacher who was very anti-Christian, and he had Jim sent home because of his shoes that didn't meet dress code. So I thought, somebody's got to stand up here and take action. So I went home. I got a white long sleeve dress shirt.
Oh boy.
And a magic marker, and I wrote all over it, repent, the kingdom is at hand, you know, and this whole thing. And they had an assembly that day. I walked out, I waited for the whole student body to be there in the bleachers, and I walked out with my arms stretched out with this Christian graffiti all over my shirt.
Unbelievable.
So even though I was a Christian, I was still a little bit rebellious.
Yeah,
You know, they thought I was nuts, but I was set free from so many things. I was loving life for the first time. I had a miserable childhood. I can't go into detail about all that, but you name it, I went through it as a kid. A lot of abuse, a lot of ugly stuff. So when I got saved, I was saved from my former life. Completely. It was a 180-degree thing. I just hit the ground running and kept going. So I never regretted it. And I wasn't like the kid at the camp that said, we're going to go back to normal. I never went back. There was nothing to go back to. Now, the thing is, I was not a typical 60s teenager. I didn't do drugs. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I was a virgin. I graduated from high school never drinking, smoking, or doing drugs. And I was a virgin.
You've heard of the Virgin Mary. This is the Virgin Michaels here.
But it was kind of an anomaly. And I used to joke and say, well, I decided to become a Christian because all the Christian, I was living cleaner than most of the church kids I knew. That's cold. But sometimes true.
Oh, yeah. Often true.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just locked in. And I loved my time at Skyline Church. It opened doors for me. I started devouring the scriptures because I'd never read it as a kid. And I started memorizing scriptures as a teenager in high school. And it was just, it became the dominant thing in my life. I loved the Bible. I loved who Jesus claimed to be. And I loved who he is. And I had great teaching. We had some great pastoral staff at Skyline in those days. And they have continued through the years to have some great preachers and teachers. But it laid a foundation for me that just continued to grow. One last story before we go to a break. There was a lady, a young lady in the college group named Elaine Howarth, and she came to me and said, Jim, I think you have a calling to ministry. I didn't know what that meant. Lo and behold, she was prophetic. And I did have a calling to ministry. And I still am a minister. So it's been a good ride. I'm going to tell some more stories here, but I know we're coming up on a break.
Well, we have a calling for a break right now. We'll be right back. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
Welcome back to one more segment of the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
And we just had a little moment celebrating Skyline Church. And I'm happy to promote Skyline Church. Now, while I was there, I was getting very involved in the youth group. As I mentioned, I became the president of the youth group. In fact, I was the Skyliner of the Year. I don't even know what that is, but they gave me a little trophy, and I was the Skyliner of the Year.
I don't think they give that trophy out
probably
anymore.
Not. Now, as I said, I started just devouring the scriptures, because it was new to me and I was hungry, and it really fed my soul. And a strange thing happened at one point. I developed walking pneumonia. I didn't know I had it. I was just coughing, and it wouldn't go away. And I went to Dr. Kanaga, who was a member of Skyline Church, and his daughter and I were schoolmates, and she went to Mount McGill. And I went to see Dr. K. I said, I've got this cough, and he does all this stuff, and he says, you've got pneumonia. He said, you'd have lived about another 3 weeks if you hadn't come to see me.
Wow.
Your lungs have filled up with fluid. And so he put me on a respirator. I had bed rest, and
You were in the hospital on the respirator.
No, I stayed with. There was a couple in the church at Skyline,
and they set up a respirator.
And they took me in their home, and I stayed there and got well. And finally, Dr. Kanaga said, "You're well. I've done everything I can. You don't have pneumonia." But I still had this little lingering, nagging cough. And it bothered me. Well, I had read this verse in the book of James that said, if anyone is sick, let him call for the elders of the church. So after service one Sunday morning, I went up there, and there was Pastor Butcher, and I showed him, I've got this cough. I went to Dr. Kanaga, who Pastor knew, and I said, but I'm still coughing, and the Bible says that you'll pray for me. And this is not a Pentecostal church. This was Skyline Wesleyan Methodist.
They don't know what the heck you're talking about.
No, he knew just what I was talking about. He called the other pastors over, and his dad, Pop Butcher, who was an old school preacher, he was a circuit preacher, did brush arbor meetings and all that, and they had a little bottle of oil under the pulpit. I never saw it before or after that. And they pulled out this little bottle of oil and anointed me with oil.
Were you the first one they ever used it on?
You know, it was a foreign thing to all of us. They anointed me with oil and they prayed. And I'm telling you, Pop Butcher started praying, and you would have thought he was a Pentecostal. He's praying at the top of his lungs and he's calling down heaven. And I was healed. And from that moment on, I never doubted the power of God. I was a teenager, baby Christian, but I asked the elders to pray for me, and they did, and I got healed. The cough went away, never had an issue with pneumonia again. And I'm a young, impressionable kid, and I was kind of taking things, if it said it in the Bible, I just believed it. You know, it's either true or it's not. And,
well, God says he wants us to have a childlike faith, so that's why that was working so well for you.
And that's what was going on, so that was a great moment in my life because it was foundational for me believing God when I pray or asking others to pray for me. Now, time was kind of rolling on, and it was before the Jesus movement had really hit. We didn't have Chuck Girard and all the stuff up there with Chuck Smith's group that the movie Jesus Revolution was about, and Larry Norman hadn't hit the scene. The best we had was Andre Crouch, but it was really just old gospel stuff that they did. So because in the Wesleyan church in those days, you weren't allowed to dance. So the kids in the youth group were not supposed to go to the dance after the football game. And especially if you're an officer, I was the president. I didn't even go to my own prom. Couldn't go to a dance. So they started a thing called the Life House. And Jimmy Johnson, the youth pastor, headed it up. And they had free pizza and soft drinks and live music. They took the chairs out of the sanctuary and rolled out this indoor-outdoor carpet and had a big youth thing. And we'd have 700 kids packed in there, and Jimmy was wild. He used to drive around in a 1954 Cadillac hearse. He comes out one night, and it's noisy, 700 kids just all pumped up because of the football game and the soda they're drinking. And he comes out with a double-barrel shotgun with blanks in it, and unloads it into the rafters. And it stunned everybody. He said, now that I have your attention. So we'd do it in music. We were doing the best we could. You know, we'd sing whatever song sounded kind of spiritual. We had a band, the King James Version. And then later on, I was
in That was the name of your band, the King James
Version? Yeah, King James Version. Should have called it the Amplified Version. But and they would do songs that remotely sounded spiritual or had some reference to God in there somewhere. And then later on, there was some actual real Christian, contemporary rock and roll, whatever you want to call it. And so I was real involved in that, doing music, playing music. Then we had a group, two other friends of mine and I, Jim Patton and Dave Robinson and myself, and it was Barrier, Robinson, and Patton, BURP for short. And we were doing more acoustic stuff because that was when Crosby, Stills, and Nash and some
of
those.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were kind of doing that. And by then there was, you know, some better music, but it was a great, great time of outreach. And then the Jesus movement started to happen. And we talked about the Jesus Revolution movie when it came out, but I was smack dab in the middle of that. You know, I played on stage with all of those guys, and it was a great, great time. Now, I guess we're coming to a close. Let me wrap this up with a relevant point from today. I'm going to a church that I just love in San Antonio, and my grandson is now going to the youth group. He's 16 years old, and he loves going to the youth group.
Same age you were.
As I was, and I thought, could history repeat itself? Could my grandson turn his life over to Jesus?
God can be very cyclical, so it's starting to look that way.
If you're a praying person, put my grandson, his name is Gabriel.
Oh, there's a good biblical name.
That's a great name, great name. And I would love nothing more than to see Gabriel turn his life over to Jesus. So it's a good thing. So that's kind of my testimony, Bob, and I don't regret ever turning my life over to Jesus. I don't regret it. I don't regret the things I've done. Someday I'll tell you about the amazing hitchhiking journey when I gave away everything I owned except my Bible and toothbrush and hitchhiked across America and back to preach the gospel.
Oh, that sounds like an autobiographical novel.
Right? It was when I was 18. I was much older.
Right. Well, Jim, it's always great to have you on, and even better, what a treat to have you here in person. We'll look forward to you being here, I guess, on the phone again next month, and we will see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.